British Sky Broadcasting, in association with 20th Century Fox, presents The Grapes of Wrath, from the best-selling novel by John Steinbeck, starring Henry Fonda as Tom Joad and Jane Darwell as Ma Joad, also starring Charlie Grapewin, Doris Bowden, John Carradine, and Russell Simpson. The director is John Ford. Audio described by Tony Cook on behalf of the MCS Agency. In the central part of the United States lies an area called the Dust Bowl because of its lack of rain. Here, drought and poverty combine to deprive many farmers of their land. This is the story of one farmer's family driven from their fields by natural disasters and economic changes, and their great journey in search of peace, security, and another home. In rural Oklahoma, Tom Joad walks in the middle of a deserted highway, lined by telegraph poles to his right. On the other side, there's flat, unfenced countryside. His shadow falls in front of him as he strolls, hands in his pockets, towards a crossroads, where the Crossroads Cafe is open for business. A truck, bearing the sign the Oklahoma City Transport Company, is parked outside the cafe. Wearing a new but ill-fitting suit and a cap, he leans with one hand on the rear of the truck as the driver says goodbye to the cafe owner.
When you be back, Roy?
Oh, in a couple of weeks. Don't do nothing you wouldn't want me to hear about.
Oh, well, so long.
So long.
Tom ambles to the driver's cab where the window is down. A notice says no riders allowed, instructions of owner.
About a lift, mister. Can't you see that sticker?
Sure, I see it. But a good guy don't pay no attention to what some heel makes him stick on his truck.
Well, scrunch down the running board till we get around the bend.
Tom crouches down on the step beneath the driver's door, holding on to the door handle and the wind mirror of the lorry. Later, he sits in the cab beside the driver.
Going far?
Just a couple of miles. I'd have walked her if my dogs wasn't pooped out.
Looking for a job?
No, my old man's got a place. 40 acres. He's a sharecropper, but we've been there a long while.
Oh. Been doing the job?
Yeah.
I've seen your hands. You've been swinging a pick or a sledge. That's what makes them shiny. I notice little things like that all the time. Got a trade?
Why don't you get at it, buddy?
Get at what?
You know what I'm talking about. You've been going over me ever since I got in. Why don't you ask me where I've been?
Well, I don't stick my nose in nobody's business.
Not much.
Well, I stay in my own yard.
That big nose of yours has been going over me like a sheep in a vegetable patch. Well, I ain't keeping it a secret. I've been in the penitentiary. Been there 4 years. Anything else you want to know?
Well, you ain't got to get sore.
Go ahead, ask me anything.
I didn't mean nothing.
Me neither. I'm just trying to get along without shoving anybody, that's all. See that road ahead? That's where I get out.
Tom climbs from the truck and pauses, holding the door.
You're about to bust a gut to know what I done, ain't you? Well, I had a guy to let you down. Homicide.
The driver looks startled and quickly drives away. Tom strides along a farm track, his shoes kicking up the dust as he walks. Ahead of him, a gaunt-faced man called Jim Casey sits beside a rock under a willow tree. He's emptying the dust from his right shoe.
He's my savior. My savior. My savior now. Howdy, friend.
Howdy. Say, ain't you young Tom Joad, old Tom's boy? Yeah, I'm on my way home now.
Well, I do declare. I baptized you, son.
Ain't you the preacher?
He has a manic look in his eyes. He puts his shoe back on.
Used to be. Not no more. I lost the call. But boy, I sure used to have it. Well, I used to get an irrigation ditch so squirming full of repented sinners, I'd pretty near drown half of them. But not no more. I lost the spirit. I got nothing to preach about no more, that's all.
I ain't so sure of things.
I remember you preaching a whole sermon, walking around on your hands, shouting your head off.
Yeah, I remember. Went pretty good that way. But that was nothing. Well, I preached a whole sermon once straddling the ridgepole of a barn, like this.
He struts in a squatting position, both arms in the air.
You see that one?
No.
You didn't? Well, it's all gone anyway.
You should have got yourself a wife.
Why, at my meetings, I used to get the girls a glory shot until they about pass out. Then I go to comfort them. I'd always end up by loving them. I'd feel bad and pray, but it didn't do no good. Next time, do it again. I figured I just wasn't worth saving.
Paula says you was never cut out for no preacher. I never let one get by me if I could catch her. I was snoring.
But you wasn't a preacher. A girl was just a girl to you. To me, they's holy vessels. I was saving their souls.
He takes a swig from a liquor bottle Tom produced.
I ask myself, what is this here called Holy Spirit? Maybe that's love. Why, I love everybody so much, I'm fit to bust sometimes. So, maybe there ain't no sin, there ain't no virtue. It's just what people does.
He takes another swig.
Some things folks do is nice, and some ain't so nice. And that's all any man's got a right to say. Of course, I'll say a grace if somebody sets out the food. But my heart ain't in it. Nice drinking liquor.
Yeah, it ought to be. That's factory liquor. Cost me a buck.
You been out traveling around?
Haven't you heard? It's been in the papers.
No, I never. What?
I've been in the penitentiary for 4 years.
Well, excuse me for asking.
Tom finishes off the liquor.
I don't mind no more. I'd do what I'd done again. Killed a guy in a dance hall. We was drunk. He got a knife in me, and I laid him out with a shovel. Knocked his head plumb to squash.
You ain't ashamed?
No, he had a knife in me. That's why they only give me 7 years. I got out in 4, parole.
Ain't seen your folks since?
No, but I aim to for sundown. And I'm getting excited about it, too. Which way are you going?
Well, it don't matter. Ever since I lost the spirit, I looks like I'd just soon go one way as the other. I'll go your way.
Casey and Tom walk together.
Maybe Ma'll have pork for supper. I ain't had pork but 4 times in 4 years, every Christmas.
I'll be glad to see your pa. Last time I seen him was at a baptizing. He had one of the biggest doses of the Holy Spirit I ever seen. Got to jumping over bushes, howling like a dog wolf at moontime. Finally, he picks himself out a bush big as a piano, and he lets out a squawk and takes a run at that bush. Woo!
Casey jumps a wooden fence and falls into the dust. He slowly gets to his feet.
Well, he cleared her, but he busts his leg snapping too, doing it. There was a traveling dentist there, and he set her, and I give her a praying over, but there wasn't no more Holy Spirit left in your paw after that.
They both look at the turbulent sky.
Listen, that wind's fixing to do something.
Sure it is. Always is this time of year.
As the wind blows up the dust around them, they walk on to Tom's family home, a timber cabin with a veranda. On the post box at the dilapidated gate, a notice gives the family name, Jode. The farmhouse looks abandoned, surrounded by stark trees. Both men walk to the door, the wind flapping in their clothes. The door is not locked, and Tom goes inside, followed by Casey. Casey searches his pockets for matches but can't find any. Tom produces a box from his pocket and lights a candle he finds on a table. He grips the candle and looks around his former home.
They're all gone or dead.
They never wrote you nothing?
No, there wasn't people to write.
Shielding the candle with his hand, Tom picks up an old shoe.
It's Ma's. She had them for years.
Tom tosses the shoe aside. The two men exchange puzzled glances. Tom squats down and picks up a battered old hat. He examines it in the light from the candle he's holding.
Used to be mine. I gave it to Grandpa when I went away. You reckon they're dead?
I never heard nothing about it.
Tom investigates the noise.
Tommy?
A bearded man wearing a felt hat is hiding in the shadows. He looks deranged and stares suspiciously.
Muley? Where's my folks, Muley?
Why, they gone.
I know they're gone, but where are they gone? It's Muley Graves. You remember the preacher, don't you?
I ain't no preacher anymore.
All right, you remember the man, don't you?
Glad to see you again.
Glad to see you.
No, where are my folks?
They gone. They gone to your Uncle John's, the whole crowd of them, 2 weeks ago. But they can't stay there either, because John's got his notice to get off.
What happened? How come they gotta get off? We lived here 50 years, same place.
Everybody's got to get off. Everybody's leaving, going out to California. Your folks, my folks, everybody's folks. Everybody except me. I ain't getting off.
Who done it?
Listen, that's someone who done it. The Dusters, they started anyways. Blowing like this year after year, blowing the land away, blowing the crops away, blowing us away now.
You crazy?
Some say I am. You want to hear how it happened?
That's what I'm asking you, ain't it?
Well, the way it happens, the way it happened to me, a man come one day.
Fact of the matter, Muley, after what them Dusters done to the land, the tenant system don't work no more. They don't even break even, much less show a profit. Why, one man in a tractor can handle 12 or 14 of these places. You just pay him a wage and take all the crop.
Yeah, but we couldn't do on any less than what our share is now. Well, the children ain't getting enough to eat as it is. And they're so ragged. We'd be ashamed if everybody else's children wasn't the same way.
I can't help that. All I know is I got my orders. They told me to tell you to get off, and that's what I'm telling you.
You mean get off my own land?
Oh, don't go into blaming me. It ain't my fault.
Whose fault is it?
You know who owns the land, the Shawnee Land and Cattle Company.
And who's the Shawnee Land and Cattle Company?
It ain't nobody. It's a company.
They got a president, ain't they? They got somebody who knows what a shotgun's for, ain't they?
Oh, son, it ain't his fault because the bank tells him what to do.
All right. Where's the bank?
Tulsa. What's the use of picking on him? He ain't nothing but the manager. And he's half crazy himself trying to keep up with his orders from the east.
Then who do we shoot?
Brother, I don't know. If I did, I'd tell you. I just don't know who's to blame.
I'm right here to tell you, mister, there ain't nobody gonna push me off my land. My grandpa took up this land 70 years ago. My pa was born here. We was all born on it. And some of us was killed on it.
In Muley's flashback, the land company agent with a fat cigar in his mouth drives off in his open-top saloon car, ignoring the family's protests.
And some of us died on it. And that's what makes it iron. Being born on it, and working on it, and dying on it, and not no piece of paper with a writing on it.
Muley remembers squatting in the dust, unable to do anything against the uncaring bureaucrats.
What happened?
They come. They come and pushed me off. They come with the cats.
What?
The cats. The Caterpillar tractors.
Muley has a flashback again, remembering the arrival of the Caterpillar tractors.
And for every one of them, there was 10, 15 families thrown right out of their homes. 100 folks, and no place to live but on the road. The Rances, the Peterses, the Perrys, the Joneses, one right after the other, they got thrown out. Half the folks you and me know thrown right down into the road. The one that got me come, oh, about a month ago.
Go on back! Go on back! I'm warning you! Go on back!
Muley remembers standing with his family as the Caterpillar tractor crashed through his fence. He challenged the driver with a shotgun.
You come any closer and I'm going to blow you right out of that tent. I told you. Well, you're Joe Davis's boy.
I don't like for nobody to draw a bead on me.
Then what are you doing a thing like this for, against your own people?
$3 a day, that's what I'm doing it for. I got two little kids at home, my wife, my wife's mother. Them folks gotta eat. First and only, I think about my own folks. What happened to other people, their own lookout.
Yeah, but you don't understand, son. This is my land.
Used to be your land. It's the cotton's now.
Have it your own way, son. But just as sure as you touch my house with that cat, I'm gonna blow you plumb to kingdom come.
You ain't gonna blow nobody nowhere. First place they'd hang in, you know it. For another, it wouldn't be 2 days before they'd send another guy up here to take my place. Now go on, get out of the way.
As Muley's wife and two sons watch in horror, the Caterpillar rips into their rundown shack where the Muley families have lived for 70 years. Muley continues to point his gun for a while and then lowers it in resigned acceptance. Their home is demolished. Their scant personal possessions lie among the debris. They stare in dismay at the tracks left by the tractor as it drives away. The family washing flaps on a line behind them.
He was right, and there wasn't a thing in the world I could do about it.
Just, it don't seem possible, just getting thrown off like that.
The rest of my family set out for the West. There wasn't nothing to eat, but I couldn't leave. Something just wouldn't let me. So now I just wander around and sleep wherever I am. I used to tell myself that I was looking out for things so that when the folks come back, everything would be all right. But I know that wasn't true. There ain't nothing to look out for. And ain't nobody ever coming back. They're gone. And me, I'm just a old graveyard ghost. That's all in the world I am. Do you think I'm touched?
Casey slowly lifts his head to look Muley in the eyes.
No. You're lonely, but you ain't touched.
Well, it don't matter. If I'm touched, I'm touched, and that's all there is to it.
Thing I don't understand is my folks taken. Like Ma. I seen her nearly beat a peddler to death with a live chicken. She aimed to go for him with axe. She had another hand. She got mixed up, forgot which was which, and when she got through that peddler, all she had left was two chicken legs.
Just a plain old graveyard ghost. That's all.
Muley lowers his head as his eyes fill with tears. Tom leads them outside the cabin. He spits and hits his cap against the wall. The sun has gone down.
Settling.
What do you figure on doing?
It's hard to say. Stay here till morning, go over to Uncle John's, I reckon. After that, I don't know.
Listen.
In the distance, they see the lights of a car heading their way.
That's them. Them lights.
Come on, come on. We gotta hide out.
Hide out for what? We ain't doing nothing.
Well, you're trespassing, Tom. This ain't your land no more. And that's the superintendent with a gun. Come on.
Come on, Tom. You're on parole.
Tom reluctantly goes to hide in the undergrowth with the others while the night patrol gets closer. The open-top saloon drives over the broken-down fence and parks in front of the cabin. A man wearing a Stetson hat and a leather jacket gets out of the passenger side. A tin star is pinned to his chest. The car headlights are left on, and the patrolman carries a flashlight.
Muley?
He looks around, and when he sees nothing, he picks up a rock and hurls it at a window in the cabin.
All you gotta do is hide and watch.
Won't they come out here?
I don't think so. One came out once and I clipped him from behind with a fence stake. They ain't bothered since.
The patrolman shakes his head and talks to his driver.
He ain't here.
The three men furtively watch as he gets back into the car and is driven off.
Nobody ever told me I'd be hiding out in my own place.
Tom spits in disgust. The next morning, silhouetted against the cloudy horizon, Tom and Casey continue on to Uncle John's farm, where everyone in the extended Jode family is at breakfast.
Lord, make us grateful for what we are about to receive for his sake. Amen.
I seen you. You at Durin Grace.
Just one little dab, just one teeny little old dab, that's all.
Ain't he messy, though?
I seen him gobbling away like an old pig.
Why don't you keep your eyes shut, Durin Grace, you old...
What's it say again, Uncle John?
It says, plenty of work in California. 800 pickers wanted.
Grandpa Jode, food on his chin, sits next to Grandma.
Wait till I get to California. I'm going to reach up and pick me orange whenever I want it. Or some grapes. No. There's something I ain't never had enough of. I'm going to get me a whole big bunch of grapes off in the bush, and I'm going to squash them all over my face and let the juice drain down off in my chin.
Praise the Lord for victory.
Maybe I'll get me a whole wash tub full of grapes and just sit in them and scrounge around in them until they're all gone. I sure would like that.
Ma Jode hovers as the other seven sit eating. She wipes Grandpa's face with a tea cloth.
Oh, thank God, thank God. Tommy.
Tom smiles broadly at his mother.
Ma. Oh.
She holds his hand.
You didn't bust out, did you? You ain't gotta hide, have you?
No, Ma, I'm paroled. I got my papers.
Oh, I was just scared we was going away without you and we'd never see each other again.
I'd have found you, Ma. Muley told me what happened. We going to California, true?
Oh, we gotta go, Tommy. But it's gonna be all right. I seen the handbills about how much work they is and high wages, too. There's something I gotta find out first, Tommy. Did they hurt you, son? Did they hurt you and make you mean mad?
Mad, Ma?
Sometimes they do.
No, Ma, I was at first, but not no more.
Sometimes they do something to you. They hurt you and you get mad and then you get mean. And they hurt you again and you get meaner and meaner till you ain't no boy nor man anymore, just a walking chunk of mean mad. Did they hurt you that way, son?
Ma, don't worry about that.
Well, I don't want no mean, son.
It's Tommy! It's Tommy back!
Tommy!
What'd you do, son?
Tommy!
Bust out?
Tommy! Tommy!
I knowed it! You couldn't keep him in. You can't keep a Jode in jail. I knowed it from the first. I will. I told you so. I told you. Tom would come busting out of that jail just like a bull through a corral fence. You can't keep a goat in jail.
I no, sir. Bust out, they paroled.
I was that way myself.
Hi, Uncle John.
Hello,
Tommy. I'm feeling fine. I know.
Fine, Tommy. Bust out.
No, parole. Hello?
Tommy!
The jailbird's back! The jailbird's back!
Hi, Al.
Hello, Tom. Did you bust out of jail?
Nah, they paroled me.
Oh.
Rosa Sharon.
Fussed it out.
That's Connie Rivers with her. They're married now. She's due now about 3-4 months.
She wasn't any more than a kid when I went up. Hi, Rosa Sharon.
How are you, Tom? This is Connie, my husband.
Did you?
Ah, parole. Yeah, this don't beat all. See, I'm gonna be an uncle soon.
Oh, you do not.
Hey, Joan! John, Joan!
The landowner's agent sits in a smart convertible puffing on a big cigar.
You ain't forgot, have you?
We ain't forgot.
We'll be coming through here tomorrow, you know.
I know. We be out. We be out by sunup.
There's a more somber mood as the extended family watches the agent reverse his convertible and drive away. Before dawn, they're loading a rickety and lurching truck with their possessions. An oil lamp rests on a wheel arch. Tom addresses his pa.
How'd you get all this money?
Sold things. Chopped cotton, even Grandpa. Got us about $200 all told. Chucked out $75 for this here truck. Still got nearly $150 to set out on. I figure we ought to be able to make her on that.
Easy. After all, there ain't but about 12 of us, is they?
She'll probably ride like a bull calf.
Tom.
But she'll ride.
Well, I reckon we better begin rousing them out of him to get out of here by daylight. How about it, John? How are you boys coming?
Inside the almost empty house, Ma sits in front of her open stove. A straw hat is on her head. Wistfulness is in her eyes as she sorts through a small box of mementos and souvenirs acquired over the years. She places a letter to her lips and puts it to one side. She plucks out a postcard from New York showing the Statue of Liberty. She smiles when she reads the message. Hello, honey. Willie May. She shakes her head and puts the postcard in the fire. She produces a newspaper clipping with the headline, Jode Gets 7 Years. She remembers the pain she felt. The clipping, too, goes in the fire. She picks out a pot dog with a pug nose. An inscription reads, Souvenir of Louisiana Purchase Exposition, St. Louis, 1904. She keeps the dog. A pair of dangling earrings brings back memories of long ago. She places them in her left palm and gently strokes them. She holds them up to her ears and looks at her reflection in a mirror. There's sadness in her eyes as she slowly lowers the earrings. They go into her pocket. A coffee pot steams on top of the stove.
Ma!
I'm ready.
She slowly places the letter she'd put to one side in the fire.
Rosa Sharon, honey, wake up the children. We're fixing to leave. Ruthie, Winfield, jump up now.
Where's Grandpa? Al, go get him.
I've got to get up front. Somebody help me. Wait a minute. Somebody help me.
Kid, you climb up on top first. Al's going to drive, Ma. You sit up there with him and Grandma, and we'll swap around later. Honey, help Rosa Sharon up there alongside the kid. Where's Grandpa?
Grandpa? Where he always is, probably.
Oh. Grandpa!
Grandpa!
Well, save my place. John, you and Nora climb up and find yourself a place. Kind of keep her even all around.
Pa, Tom, and Casey crouch down to look at a wheel as the chassis sinks down with its load.
You think it'll hold?
If it does, it'll be a miracle out of scripture.
Let me alone, that's all.
What's the matter, Grandpa?
Well, you know, what's the matter? There's nothing the matter. I just ain't going, that's all.
What do you mean you ain't going? We gotta go. We got no place to stay.
I ain't talking about you. I'm talking about me. I give her a good going over all last night, and I am a stare.
But you can't do that, Grandpa. This here land's going under the tractor. We all gotta get out.
Oh, except me, and I'm staying.
What about Grandma?
Take her with you!
Who'd cook for you, Grandpa? How are you gonna live?
Muley's living, ain't he? And I'm twice the man that Muley is.
Now listen to me, Grandpa. Listen to me just a minute.
And I ain't listening either. I told you what I was gonna do, and I don't give a hoot and a holler at this oranges and grapes a crowding a fella out of bed. I ain't going to California. This is my country, and I belong here. Yes, my dirt. It's no good, but it's mine. All mine.
Either we gotta tie him up and throw him in the truck or something. He can't stay here.
Oh, can't tie him. Either we'll hurt him or he'll get so mad he'll hurt himself. Reckon we could get him drunk.
Ain't no whiskey, is there?
Now, wait. There's a half a bottle of soothing syrup here. Here. Used to put the chillum to sleep.
Tom takes a sip.
Don't taste bad.
There's some coffee left. We can fix him a cup.
That's right. And douse some in it.
Better give him a good dose. He's mighty mule-headed.
If Murray can scrabble along, I guess I can.
Grandpa sits on the step.
I smell spare ribs. Somebody's been eating spare ribs.
How come I ain't got none?
Well, I got some saved for you, Grandpa. Got some warming now. But here's a cup of coffee for you first.
Yeah. Get me a mess of spare ribs. I want a great big mess of spare ribs. I'm hungry.
Why, sure you're hungry.
They watch as Grandpa drinks the drug coffee.
I sure do like spare ribs.
He gulps down some more. Soon he's flat out, and they load him horizontally onto the truck.
Get up there, Noah. Put his feet in there first, Tom. Easy now. Easy! Head over. Better throw something over and go home and get a dump truck. Hi, howdy. Everything all set now? All right, let her go, Al.
Here we go.
Get aboard, Ma.
Well, goodbye and good luck.
All right, Al. Ain't you going with us?
I'd like to. There's something going on out there in the West, and I'd like to try and learn what it is. If you feel you got the room.
They exchange glances and nod.
Plenty of room. Get on.
Okay.
There we go, Al.
California, here we go.
With Casey now on board, the vastly overladen vehicle trundles off as another dust storm blows up around the deserted farmhouse. Ma sits in the cab. Her teenage son, Al, is at the wheel. Grandma sits in the middle.
Ain't you gonna look back, Ma? Give the old place a last look? We're going to California, ain't we? All right then, let's go to California.
That don't sound like you, Ma. You never was like that before.
I never had my house pushed over before. Never had my family stuck out in the road. Never had to lose everything I had in life.
Ma stares ahead, determined to keep her dignity. Everyone else squats where they can, astride the luggage in the back of the open truck. Grandpa sleeps on a makeshift bed. The truck sways and lurches its way onto Highway 66. They pass a road sign saying Sally's Sauce City Limit. Another sign offers hot fish dinners with Corn Dodger. The next says Chakotay City Limit. The truck keeps up its fast pace past a further sign saying Oklahoma City. When they've cleared the city, they pull off the road into a lay-by, surrounded by rolling countryside. They lay Grandpa onto a blanket on the ground. Ma places a pillow under his head.
He's going to be all right, Grandpa.
I ain't going. It's all right, Grandpa. You're just tired, that's all.
That's it. Just tired.
Pa leans over him, concerned. Grandpa grips a handful of soil. His grip relaxes, and the soil falls onto his chest. His arm sinks to his side. Pa places his hand on Grandpa's forehead. He looks to the others. No words are necessary. Grandpa has died. They're still in the lay-by at dusk. Using the headlights of the truck, Tom writes a grave marker in the flyleaf of the family Bible.
This here is William James Jode, died of a stroke. Old man. His folks buried him because they got no money to pay for funeral.
Tom tries to correct his spelling of the word funeral. Pa holds a fruit jar for the message to be placed in.
Nobody killed him. Just a stroke and he died. Figure best we leave something like this on him and unless somebody digs him up and makes out he was killed. Mm. Looks like a lot of times the government's got more interest in a dead man than a live one.
Not be so lonesome, knowing his name's there with him. Not just an old fella lonesome underground.
Won't you say a few words, Casey?
I ain't a preacher no more, you know.
We know, but ain't none of our folks ever been buried without a few words.
I'll say 'em. Make it short.
They all gather round the graveside.
This here old man just lived a life and just died out of it. I don't know whether he was good or bad. It don't matter much. Heard a fella say a poem once, and he says, all that lives is holy. But I wouldn't pray just for an old man that's dead, because he's all right. If I was to pray, I'd pray for folks that's alive and don't know which way to turn. Grandpa here, he ain't got no more trouble like that. He's got his job all cut out for him, so cover him up and let him get to it.
Grandma smokes her pipe, her eyes brimmed with tears. Her eldest grandson, Noah, shovels soil onto the grave. Ma hugs the two youngest children, Winfield and Ruthie. They cry on her shoulders. She sobs too. They travel throughout the next day. Steam seeps from the truck's radiator. They pass a sign saying water, 15 cents a gallon. They head through a mountainous region, and when night comes again, they pull into a site offering camping at 50 cents. Connie gets out his guitar.
I'm going down the road feeling bad. I'm going down the road feeling bad. I'm gone down the road feeling bad, oh Lordy. I ain't gonna be treated this way. They fed me on cornbread and beans. They fed me on cornbread and beans.
Gosh, Connie sure sings pretty, don't
he? Beans. Oh, Lordy, I ain't gonna be treated this way.
That's my son-in-law. Seems real nice.
What state you all from?
Oklahoma. Had us a farm there, sharecropping.
We're from Arkansas. Had me a store there, kind of a general notion store. When the farms went, the stores went too. I had as nice a little store as you ever saw. I sure did hate to give it up.
Well, you can't tell. I figure when we get out there and get work and maybe get us a piece of growing land near water, it might not be so bad at that.
That's right. Paying good wages, I hear.
We can all get work.
Can't be no worse than home.
You all must have a pot of money.
No, we ain't got no money. But there's plenty of us to work and we're all good men. Get good wages out there and put it all together and we'll be all right.
Good wages, eh? Picking oranges and peaches?
Well, we aim to take whatever they got.
What's so funny about that?
What's so funny about it? I've just been out there. I've been and seen it. I'm going back and starve, because I'd rather starve all over at once.
Say, what do you think you're talking about? I got a handbill here says they're paying good wages, and I seen in the papers that they need pickers.
All right. Go on. Nobody's stopping you.
Hey, but what about this?
I ain't gonna rile you. Go on.
Wait a minute, buddy. You just done some jackassing. You can't shut up now. The handbills say they need 800 pickers. You laugh and say they don't. Which one's a liar?
Now, how many of you all got them handbills?
I got one.
Come on. How many?
I got one. We all got one.
I got one.
What does that prove?
There you are. Same yellow handbill. 800 pickers wanted. All right, the man wants 800 men. So he prints 5,000 handbills, and maybe 20,000 people see him. And maybe 2,000 or 3,000 people start west on account of that handbill. 2,000 or 3,000 people that are crazy with worry, heading out for 800 jobs. Now, does that make sense?
Say, what are you, a troublemaker? You sure you ain't one of them labor fakes?
I swear I ain't, mister.
Oh, don't you go around here trying to stir up any trouble.
I tried to tell you folks what it took me a year to find out. Took two kids dead. Took my wife dead to show me. But nobody could tell me neither. I can't tell you about them little fellas laying in the tent with their bellies swelled out and just skin over their bones, a shivering and a whining like pups, and me a running around looking for work. Not for money, not for wages, just for a cup of flour and a spoon of lard. Then the coroner come. Them children died of heart failure, he said. He put it down in his paper. Heart failure? And their little belly stuck out like a pig bladder?
Well, it's late. You gotta get some sleep.
Well, good night, folks.
The others disperse to their tents, leaving Pa, Tom, and Casey in confusion. Pa slaps his pipe in the palm of his hand.
Suppose he's telling the truth, that fella?
He's telling the truth. The truth for him. He wasn't making it up.
Was it the truth for us?
I don't know.
Tom and Pa leave Casey sitting on the veranda of the timber campsite office. He glances again at the handbill offering jobs and hope. The next day, they're back on Route 66, crossing the bridge spanning the Pecos River in New Mexico. A steam train crosses on a viaduct. The heavily laden truck passes through barren countryside, where the earth is scorched by the hot sun. they pass a farmer escorting two donkeys with packs from the hillside. The truck lurches into a filling station. With steam shooting from the radiator, Grandma is desperate.
I gotta get out, I tell you. I gotta get out now!
Ma escorts Grandma, holding her hand. Tom uses his hat to unscrew the hot radiator cap. The filling station owner sidles up to them.
You folks aim to buy anything?
They want some gas, mister.
Got any money?
What do you think? They're begging?
I just asked, that's all.
Well, ask right. You ain't talking to bums, you know.
All in the world I done was asked.
Kind of pie you got?
Banana cream, pineapple cream, chocolate cream, and apple.
Cut me off a hunk of that banana cream and a cup of jelly.
I get two.
Two it is. Seen any good etchings lately, Bill?
Well, this one ain't bad. A little kid comes late for school, and the teacher says...
Pa enters the diner.
Could you see your way clear to sell us a loaf of bread, ma'am?
This ain't a grocery store. We got bread to make sandwiches with.
I know, ma'am. Only it's for an old lady. No teeth. Got to soften it with water so she can chew it. She's hungry.
Why don't you buy a sandwich? We got nice sandwiches.
Well, I sure would like to do that, ma'am. But the fact is, we ain't got but a dime for it. It's all figured out. I mean, for the trip.
You can't buy no loaf of bread for a dime. We only got 15-cent loaves.
Give them the bread.
We'll run out before the bread truck comes.
All right, then we run out.
The waitress crossly gets up from her stool at the bar. The only other customers, two truck drivers, tuck into their food. Winfield and Ruthie join Pa in the diner. Winfield stares at the candy bars on display.
This here's a 15-cent loaf.
Well, could you see your way to cutting off 10 cents worth?
Give him the loaf.
No, sir. We want to buy 10 cents worth, that's all.
Go on, it's yesterday's bread.
Go ahead. Bert says to take it.
Well, may sound funny being so tight, but we got 1,000 miles to go, and we don't know if we'll make it. Is them penny candies, ma'am?
Which ones?
There, them stripy ones.
Oh, them? Well, no. Them's two for a penny.
Give us two then, ma'am.
The waitress hands a candy bar each to Winfield and Ruthie.
Go on, take them.
Thank you, ma'am.
Pa and the children leave the diner.
Them ain't two for a cent, candy.
What's it to you?
Them's a nickel apiece, candy.
We better get going. We're dropping time.
So long.
Hey, wait a minute. You got change coming.
What's it to you?
The two drivers leave a big tip.
Bert. Look. Truck drivers.
The relentless journey to California continues along a deserted road surrounded by a vast countryside. They pass under an archway spanning the road. A notice says, "You now leave New Mexico. Come again." Against a backdrop of rugged mountains, another sign says, "Arizona welcomes you." They pull up at the state checkpoint where a uniformed agricultural inspector with a clipboard questions them. Tom's in the driving seat.
Where are you going?
California.
How long you plan to be in Arizona?
No longer than to get across.
Got any plants?
No plants.
He slaps a ticket on the windscreen.
Okay, go ahead, but keep moving.
We aim to.
Still on Route 66, they pass a sign saying Will Rogers Highway. On a dusty road, they travel through an Indian encampment where a blacksmith is at work at the roadside. Children in Native American dress watch them pass. They're held up as a herdsman guides his sheep across the road.
Hey,
they reach the gateway to California, a bridge crossing the Colorado River. Their truck lurches dangerously as Tom pulls into a dip off the road. As the men get out to take in the view across the fast-flowing river, they're overtaken by other land-dispossessed families on their way to what they hope will be a better future.
Milk and honey. California.
Well, if that's what we came out here for.
Well, Connie, maybe it's nice on the other side. Them little picture postcards, they was real pretty.
There, Grandma. There's California.
Grandma looks on with disdain.
Let's get going. She don't look so tough to me, eh, John?
Well, I don't know.
As the truck struggles to pull out of the dip, a front wheel leaves the ground and they lurch towards overturning.
Hold on.
The vehicle rights itself and weaves its way over the bridge, the mountains of California ahead of them. They pass a campsite of neat timber chalets and a notice saying, Needles welcomes you to California. The men decide to take a dip in a shallow estuary of the river. The eldest son, Noah, plays with a piece of wood shaped like a boat. Tom playfully ducks Al's head under the water. Pa and Uncle John cautiously approach the riverside in their long johns and vests. Pa has his pipe in his mouth. They place their trousers on the riverbank.
Ain't too cold, is she, Tom?
Fine. Will you get in, Pa?
Come on, John. Let's give her a whirl.
The two men step down to the water's edge, and Pa splashes the water over himself. John follows his lead.
You know, this is supposed to be good for you, John.
Come on, Pa, before she floats away.
Here we come.
At nightfall, they halt at a filling station. Tom tops up the radiator.
You people got a lot of nerve.
What do you mean?
Crossing the desert in a jalopy like this.
You been across?
Sure, plenty, but never no wreck like that.
If we break down, maybe somebody give us a hand.
Well, maybe, but I'd hate to be doing it. Takes more nerve than I got.
It'll take no nerve to do something. Ain't nothing else you can do. If she holds.
Inside the truck, Ma cradles Grandma's head. The old woman is delirious. Casey passes it a mug of water, and Ma gently strokes Grandma's brow with the liquid.
Grandpa. I want Grandpa. I want Grandpa.
Don't you fret now. There. Don't you fret now, Grandma.
Everybody step back here! Yeah. Here we go! Thank you very much!
The two uniformed attendants stare after them as the truck pulls away. One hands a stick of chewing gum to the other.
Holy Moses, what a hard-looking outfit. All them oafies are hard-looking. Boy, but I'd hate to hit that desert in a jalopy like that.
You and me got sense. Them oafies got no sense and no feeling. They ain't human. No human being wouldn't live the way they do. Human being couldn't stand to be so miserable.
Just don't know any better, I guess.
Tom drives through the desert. In the cab with him, Al and Pa. The three sit grim-faced, staring at the barren land. The stark-looking trees, the cactus plants, the desolateness all around them.
What a place. I'd like to walk across it.
People down it. They could, we could.
Lots must have died, too.
Well, we ain't out of it yet.
In the back, Winfield and Ruthie stare out wide-eyed.
This
here's a desert, and we're right in it.
I wished it was day.
Tom says if it was day, it'd cut the gizzard right out of you. I seen the picture once, and there was bones everywhere.
Man bones?
Some, I guess, but mostly cow bones.
I sure would like to see some of them man bones.
Ma is still comforting Grandma.
Grandpa. I want Grandpa.
Yes, now everything's going to be all.
We got to get across, Grandma. The family's got to get across. There.
Connie and his pregnant wife, Rosa Shallon, sit together looking weary.
It seems like we was never doing nothing but moving. I'm tired.
Woman's always tired.
You ain't sorry, are you, honey?
No, but you've seen that advertisement in the Spicy Western Story magazine. Don't pay nothing. Just send them the coupon and you're a radio expert. Nice, clean work.
We can still do it, honey.
Ought to have done it then, not come on any trip like this.
He stares ahead, feeling dejected. Rosa Shallon studies his face with unease. They cross the desert before dawn. With steam billowing from the radiator, they're stopped at a busy state checkpoint. An officer with a clipboard props his leg on the vehicle's fender as Tom, Pa, and Al get from the cab. Another officer with a torch goes to the rear.
What's this here? Agricultural inspector. You gotta go over your stuff. Got any vegetables to see?
No.
Now we gotta look over your stuff. Get on
load. Unload? Holy
moly. Al tries to stop the steam with a cloth. The officer with the clipboard joins his colleague at the rear of the truck. Casey jumps down.
Sorry, folks, but you'll have to get out while we unload for inspection.
Oh, look, mister, we've got a sick old lady. We've got to get her to a doctor. We can't wait. You can't make us wait.
Yeah? Well, we got to look you over.
Well, I swear we ain't got anything. I swear it. Grandma's awful sick. Look.
They shine a torch on Grandma, who lies motionless with a deathly pallor.
You wasn't fooling. You swear you got no fruit or vegetables?
No, I swear it.
Then go ahead. You can get a doctor at Barstow. That's just 8 miles. But don't stop. Don't get off. Understand?
Okay, Cap. Much obliged.
Later, as the steam spirals from the engine, the men are pushing the truck up a hill. Tommy's at the wheel. They stop for a rest and Pa wipes his brow. He looks into the distance and sees a fertile landscape with neat rows of plantations.
Ma! Grandma! Look!
The others join him to take in the view, but Ma hangs back. She looks shaken.
There she is. There she is. I never knew there was anything like her.
Will you look at her?
Look yonder, John.
Look how pretty and green it is, Winfield.
One of them's orange trees, John.
They look like orange trees to me.
Well, they sure are pretty, whatever they are.
Yes, indeed.
Look at them haystacks. I bet we sure could have fun playing over there.
Pretty, ain't it? Mighty pretty.
Tom.
Where's Ma? I want Ma to see this.
Look, Ma. Come here, Ma.
Come on.
Ma sits quietly on the step of the truck.
You sick, Ma?
You say we got across?
Look.
Oh, thank God. And we're still together, most of us.
Didn't you sleep none? Was Grandma bad?
Grandma's dead.
When?
Since before they stopped us last night.
That's why you didn't want them to look, huh?
Well, I was afraid they'd stop us and we wouldn't get across. I told Grandma. I told her when she was dying. I told her the family had to get across. I told her we couldn't take no chance on being stopped. So it's all right. She'll get buried where it's nice and green and trees and flowers all around. And she got to lay her head down in California after all.
They push the rickety truck into town and stop at a filling station. It attracts the attention of a policeman. The officer ambles over to them.
How far you figure you're gonna get that way, pushing?
Right here, we run out of gas. Where's the best place to get work around here? Don't matter what kind, either.
If I seen one of them things, I seen 10,000 of them.
Ain't it no good?
Not here, not now. There was some picking around here about a month ago, but it's all moved south. Hey, what part of Oklahoma are you from, anyhow?
Salisaw.
Salisaw? Well, I come out from Cherokee County myself about 2 years ago.
Cherokee County!
Oh, you did? How you
clear? Why, Connie's folks here from Cherokee County.
Well, you don't say.
All right.
Just don't go into it. What I got to tell you is this. Don't try to park in town tonight. Just go right on out to that camp. If I catch you in town after dark, I'll lock you up.
But what are we going to do?
Well, Pop, that just ain't up to me. Don't mind telling you, the guy the auto lockup's the guy that sent them things out.
Tom holds the handbill promising jobs. The attendant holds the petrol nozzle.
How many, folks?
One.
The attendant stares incredulously as he goes to put the fuel in. Tom neatly folds the jobs leaflet and places it in the top pocket of his dungarees. They drive to the outskirts of the city and follow a sign which says, Transient Camp, 2 miles. The tottering jalopy rattles onto the rutted dirt road of the camp. An array of sad, disheveled, and hungry people watch the new arrivals with haunted faces. The truck doesn't look out of place here as it slowly passes rows of shantytown huts, hovels, and tents. A man leans glumly on another vehicle that's seen better days. The words, for sale, are painted on the bonnet. A woman walks ahead of them, her dress worn to threads. Another woman collecting firewood stares at the truck with anguished curiosity. Behind her, a female does her laundry on a washboard in a tin tub at the side of the dirt track. The camp is crowded, with little space between the squats. Homemade funnels billowing smoke emerge from the top of some of the shacks. Tom stops the truck, and they all stare around them at the hollow faces of despair. The hollow faces stare back.
Sure, I don't look none too prosperous. Want to go somewhere else?
Want a gallon of gas? Let's save up the tent and maybe I can fix some stool.
They drive off to find a site for their tent, revealing a woman in a bonnet stitching a little girl's clothes as she stands in them. Ruthie and Winfield are perched on top of the luggage on the roof of the vehicle. While the men unload the wagon, Ma tends a big stew pot on an open fire. Rosa Sharon cleans plates with a cloth. Hungry children look on in hope.
I could break up some brush if you want me, ma'am.
You want to be asked to eat, don't you?
Yes, ma'am.
Didn't you have no breakfast?
No, ma'am. There ain't no work hereabouts. Pa's been trying to sell some stuff to get gas so as we can get along.
Did none of these have no breakfast?
I did. Me and my brother did. We ate good.
Well, you ain't hungry then, are you?
We ate good.
Well, I'm glad some of you ain't hungry because there won't be enough of this to go all the way around.
Ah, he was bragging. Know what he done? Last night come out and say they got chicken to eat. Well, sir, I looked in whilst they was eating and it was fried dough, just like everybody else.
Ma, how about it?
Well, I don't know what to do. I've got to feed the family, and what am I going to do about all these here?
Pa and John feel pangs of guilt as they look at the starving children. Ma passes a plate to Rosa Sharon.
Give this to Ruthie.
Ma ladles more food onto a plate.
There you are, John.
John looks uncomfortably at the food on his plate. The children gaze pleadingly. Tom and Casey stand together, both disillusioned at what they're witnessing.
Here, Tom, you take it. I ain't hungry.
What do you mean you ain't at today?
I know, but I got a stomachache. I ain't hungry.
Take that plate in the tent and you eat it.
Wouldn't be no use. I'd still see them in the tent.
You get. Go on now, get. You ain't doing no good. Ain't enough for you anyway.
Go on. Now.
The children take a few steps backwards. Tom watches with pain on his face. An older girl runs off.
Can't send them away. Here, take your plates and go inside. Now look, all you little fellers. You each go and get you a nice flat stick, and I'll put what's left for you, huh? Now get!
The children scramble away.
I don't know whether I'm doing right or not.
Ma turns to Tom and Pa.
Get inside. Get inside, everybody, and stay inside.
Lady's gonna feed us. Get yourself a tin pan.
Some of the children pick up tin cans from a junk heap and run back. Others return with sticks. They help themselves to what's left in the stew pot. A shiny convertible arrives at the camp with the roof down. A besuited man in a trilby hat gets out, leaving a deputy sheriff in the front seat. A crowd gathers.
You men want to work?
Sure we want to work. Where's it at?
Tavares County. Fruit's opening up. Need a lot of fruit pickers.
You doing the hiring?
Well, I'm contracting the land.
What you paying?
Well, can't tell exactly yet. About 30 cents, I guess.
Why can't you tell? You took the contract, didn't you?
That's true, but it's key to the price. Might be a little more, might be a little less.
All right, mister, I'll go. You just show us your license to contract. Then you make out an order. Where and when and how much you're going to pay. And you sign it and we'll go.
Now listen, smart guy. I'll run my business my own way. I got work. If you want to take it, okay. If not, just sit here, that's all.
Twice now I fell for that line. Maybe he needs 1,000 men. So he gets 5,000 there and he'll pay 15 cents an hour. And you guys will have to take it because you'll be hungry. If he wants to hire men, let him write it out and say what he's going to pay. Ask to see his license. He ain't allowed by law to contract men without a license.
Hey, Joe. Agitator.
The law officer, puffing on a cigarette, perches himself on top of the seat rest.
Ever see this guy before?
Seems like I have. Seems like I seen him hanging around a used car lot that was busted into. Yep, that's the fella. Get in this car.
Got nothing on him.
Open your trap again and he'll go too.
Now, you fellas don't want to listen to troublemakers. You better all pack up and come on up to Tavares County.
Come on, you.
The lawman gets out and heads for the man branded an agitator. He slugs the officer on the jaw and runs off. From the ground, the deputy sheriff fires at the fleeing man. The bullet hits a woman. As others go to her aid, the sheriff is up and aiming again. Tom tackles him to the ground. The bullet goes astray. Casey kicks him in the head. The deputy lies unconscious and the agitator escapes. Casey and Tom exchange stunned glances. Tom picks up the officer's gun. Casey takes it from him.
Now get out of here. Go down on the willows and wait.
I ain't gonna run.
Why, the sheriff, he's seen you, Tom. Do you want to get fingerprinted? Do you want to be sent back for breaking parole?
Yes, you're right.
Hide in the willows. If it's all right for you to come back, I'll give you 4 high whistles.
Casey empties the remaining bullets from the chamber of the Colt 45 and throws the weapon as far as he can. 4 police officers arrive in an open-top car, sending up clouds of dust as they speed into the camp. Casey squats, smiling, beside the recovering deputy sheriff, who's sitting on the ground rubbing his neck.
What's going on here?
Oh, this man of yours, he got tough, so I hit him. And he started shooting and hit that woman there, so I hit him again.
Well, what'd you do in the first place?
I talked back.
Is this the fella that hit you? Don't look like him.
Oh, it was me, all right. You just got smart to the wrong fella.
Get in that car.
The officer looks surprised when a smiling Casey offers his wrists to be handcuffed. The officer obliges and snaps cuffs on him. The lawmen stand over the injured woman who's being cradled by another.
This lady's bleeding to death.
Boy, what a mess them 45s make. Better get the doc.
The lawmen get back into their car. Casey is sandwiched between two in the back seat, still smiling. A crowd of people in the camp stare after the police car as it speeds away. Later, when things have quietened down, Tom sneaks furtively back into the camp. He looks around but can't see anybody. Holding his cap furled in his hand, he makes for his family's tent. He runs the last few yards.
Al?
Come in now, Tom.
You gotta get out of here right away.
What's the matter?
Guy down the Willis is telling me some of them pool room fellas figuring I'd burn the whole camp out tonight. We gotta get the truck loaded. Ma? Pa?
Pa holds his pipe. Ma holds a metal rod.
What are you doing with the jack handle, Ma?
Well, she's just got sassy, that's all. She's gonna roar it out.
We'll fight that out later. Right now, we gotta hustle. Where's Connie?
Well, Tom, he's gone. He lit out this evening. Said he didn't know it was going to be like this.
Glad to get shed of him. Never was no good, never will be.
Hush.
How come I got to run out on us, didn't he?
Cut it out, Pa. Help Al with the truck. Some of the fellas in town are going to burn out to camp tonight.
Tom hears Rosa Shannon sobbing in her tent. He goes inside. She's on her bed, face down.
Oh, don't fret, honey. You'll be all right.
Tom, I just don't feel like nothing at all. Without him, I just don't want to live.
He'll be back. We'll leave word for him. Just don't you worry.
Rosa Shannon buries her face in her arm. Tom spits. As they pack their truck, an exodus of vehicles are leaving the transient camp, piled high with the meager possessions of the dispossessed. Bonfires burn alongside the camp's dirt track. An increasing number of people are packing as the word spreads. The extended Jode family are ready to hit the road again as nighttime comes. They join a queue of other vehicles on the campsite road. A man struggles to tie up a mattress at the side of the track. Rosa Shannon sits in the cab of their vehicle. Her eyes are brimmed with tears. She can think of only one thing, of only one person, the husband who's left her and her unborn baby.
Ma? Maybe Connie go and get some books to study up with. He gonna be a radio expert, you know. Maybe he figured to surprise us.
Maybe that's just what he done.
Ma, there comes a time when a man gets mad.
You told me. You promised me.
I know, Ma. I'm a
trying. Promised.
If there was a law they was working with, maybe we could take it. But it ain't the law. They're working away in our spirits. They're trying to make us cringe and crawl, working on our decency.
You promised, Tom.
I know. I'm a trying to, Ma. Honest, I am.
You've got to keep clear. The families are breaking up. You've got to keep clear.
What's that, a detour?
There's a roadblock ahead. In their headlights, they see an angry mob marching towards them with weapons. Tom reaches for the jack handle.
Tom, please!
Just where do you think you're going?
A torch is shone in his face.
Oh. We're strangers here, mister. We heard about there was work in a place called Tavares.
Yeah, well, you're heading the wrong way. What's more, we don't want no more Okies in this town. There ain't enough work here for them that's already here.
Which way's that, mister?
Well, you turn right around and head north, and don't you come back until the cotton's ready. You understand?
Tom lets off his handbrake and prepares to turn round to appease the mob against his better judgment. Later in daylight, they pull off the road with a flat tire. They're in open countryside with a range of mountains behind them. The road is lined with tall telegraph poles.
Pop! Let's try that other tire.
Got another flat tire, Tom? What, another one?
Winfield and Ruthie jump down from their perch on top of the luggage, and Ma sits on the front fender as the men get to work to change the tire. The spare tire John produces is so well worn it's lost its tread.
Wow, you get the hell off there. It's gonna be heavy enough.
Tell you, something's got to happen soon. We're down to our last day of grease and 2 days of flour and 10 potatoes. And Rosa Sharon. We gotta remember she's gonna be due soon.
Morning.
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 You folks looking for work?
Mister, we're looking even under boards for work.
Can you pick peaches?
We can pick anything.
Well, there's plenty of work for you about 40 miles up here, just this side of Pixley. You turn east on 32, look for the Keene Ranch, tell them Spencer sent you.
Mister, we sure thank you.
Thank you.
Come on, hold on.
Yay!
They're stopped at a police roadblock.
Where do you think you're going?
Well, a fella named Spencer sent us. Said there was work picking peaches.
Oh, you want to work, huh?
Sure do.
All right, just pull up in line there. Okay for this one. Take him through.
What's the matter? What happened?
Oh, a little trouble up there, but you'll get through all right.
They're stopped again. The road is lined with people and vehicles. A policeman checks the back of their wagon.
What do you think it is? A washout?
I know what these cops have got to do with it, but I don't like it. These are our own people, too, all of them. I don't like this.
Get going. Stay in line.
A man yells at them as they drive in convoy. Police restrain him. The approach road to the Keene Fruit Ranch is crowded with people. The convoy drives through an open gateway. The Jode truck is the last in the procession, and guards close the metal gates topped with barbed wire when they go through, shutting out the demonstrators. Children are among them. With sad eyes, they watch through the wire mesh in the gates as the convoy of migrant workers disappears into the distance. There are dozens of vehicles piled high with luggage. Inside the ranch, two sour-faced guards, one with a rifle and the other gripping a club, direct the vehicles to the allocated living quarters, blocks of timber cabins, each with an outside tap.
Come on, come on, come on. Go on up there. Up the street there. Keep in line, up the street.
A woman wearing an apron and holding a jug stands at the door of one of the cabins with two children. She looks mesmerized by the number of new arrivals. Another woman stands with children next to a line of washing strung between two cabins, looking equally fascinated. A guard stops Tom. He nods to another man who approaches with a clipboard.
Want to work?
Sure, but what is this?
None of your business. Name?
Jode.
How many men?
Four.
Women?
Two.
Kids?
Two.
Can you all work?
Sure, I guess so.
Okay, house 63. Wages 5 cents a box. No bruised fruit. Move along, you go to work right away.
The door of number 63 is open. A dog sniffs around outside. As Ruthie is about to climb from the back of the truck, two more guards turn up. One bends down to make a note of the number plate. The other looks in the back suspiciously. Both men go to the front of the vehicle. Pa and Ruthie help Rosa Sharon out of the back.
Come on, honey.
Name?
Jode. Say, what is all this here?
Jode, not here.
License?
Oklahoma EL-204. Don't check. Now, you look here. We don't want no trouble with you. Just do your own work and mind your business, and you'll be all right.
Sure do want to make you feel at home here, all right.
Rosa Sharon looks dismayed when she sees the starkness of the unclean cabin.
Sure, this won't be so bad once we get her washed out.
I like the tin better.
This got a floor. It wouldn't leak when it rains.
Ma picks up an old magazine.
Here, might come in handy.
As Tom helps unload, two men turn up pushing a cart.
Name?
Still Joe.
How many?
Six. You all go on. Rosa, Sharon, and me will unload the cart.
One of the men marks a clipboard, and they drop off six tin buckets for the fruit picking. Tom picks up a bucket and examines it. While Ma and Rosa Sharon tidy the inside of the cabin, Tom, Pa, John, Al, and the children stand with their buckets waiting to join a throng of people making their way to the fruit fields. The armed guards with tin stars pinned to their chests watch the procession. There's no conversation as the men, women, and children walk with their buckets. Their faces are glum. When the Jodes return to their cabin in the evening, it looks cozier. An oil lamp is hanging on a wall, another burns on the table. A coffee pot steams on the stove next to where Ma stands with a big frying pan. The others sit at the table.
Any more of them hamburgers, Ma?
No, they ain't. You made a dollar, and that's a dollar's worth.
Dollar's worth, that?
Well, they charge extra at that company store, and they ain't no other place.
Well, I ain't full.
Well, tomorrow you'll get in a full day's work and a full day's pay, and then we'll all have enough.
You wouldn't think just reaching up and picking it gets you in the back.
I think I'll walk out and find out what all that fuss outside the gate was. Anybody come with me?
No, I think I'll sit a while and go to bed.
I'll look around and see if I can't meet me a girl.
Girl? Hey, when I was your age...
Huh?
You've been working on me what all that yelling was about. Got me all curious. I'll be back in a while.
Tom lights a cigarette. Ma looks concerned.
Now, you be careful. Don't you go sticking your nose in anything.
Okay, Ma, don't worry.
Tom strides off past women washing up at the outside taps, past others standing in their doorways taking the night air. A guard lurks in the shadows.
Where do you think you're going?
Thought I'd take a walk. Is any law against that?
Well, you can just turn around and walk back.
You mean I can't even get out of here?
Not tonight, you can't. Now, do you want to walk back? Or shall I whistle up some help and have you taken back?
He shines a flashlight in Tom's eyes.
I'll walk back.
The guard flicks off his torch and places his baton under his arm. Tom ambles away, and when the guard can no longer see him, he makes a dash for the undergrowth. He emerges on a road near a river. The bright moon casts his shadow tall in front of him. He steps down a grassy slope and sees two tents pitched on the banks of the river. The water glistens in the moonlight. One of the tents has a light on inside. A table stands outside. The flap at the entrance to the tent hangs loose. He's about to glance inside when a shadow falls across him. He turns to see a man standing behind him.
Evening.
Who are you?
Just going past, that's all.
Know anybody around here?
No, just going past, I tell you.
Two men peer from the tent.
Casey.
Well, if it ain't Tom Joad. Hiya, boy.
I thought you was in jail.
No, they just run me out of town. Come on in. Tom Joad.
This the fella you've been talking about?
That's him. What are you doing here, Tom? Working, picking peaches. But I heard some fellas shouting when we come in. I come out to find out what's going on. What's it all about?
This here's a strike.
Whoa, 5 cents a box ain't much, but a fella can eat.
5 cents? They paying you 5 cents?
Sure, we made a buck since midday.
Looky, Tom, we come here to work. They tell us it's gonna be 5 cents, but there's a whole lot of us. So the man says 2.5 cents. Well, a fella can't even eat on that, and if he's got kids. So he says we won't take it. So they drive us off. Now they're paying you 5 cents. But if they bust this strike, you think they'll pay five?
No, paying five now.
They'll get 2.5 cents just the minute we're gone. You know what that is? 1 ton of peaches picked and carried for a dollar. That way you can't even buy enough food to keep you alive. Tell them to come out with us, Tom. Them peaches is ripe. 2 days out and they'll pay us all five, maybe seven.
Well, they won't. They're getting five now. That's all they care about.
But The moment they ain't strike breaking, they won't get no five.
Next thing you know, you'll be out. They got it all fixed down to a T. Well, as soon as the harvest is in, you're a migrant worker. Afterwards, just a bum.
Five they're getting now. That's all they're interested in. I know exactly what Pod say. He just say it's none of his business.
Guess that's right. You'll have to take a beating before he'll know.
Take a beating? We was out of food. Tonight we had meat. Not much, but we had it. You think Pa's gonna give up his meat on account of some other fellas? Rosa Sharon needs milk. You think Ma's gonna starve that baby just on account of fellas yelling outside a gate?
Tom, you gotta learn like I'm learning. I don't know it right yet myself, but I'm trying to find out. That's why I can't ever be a preacher again. Preacher's gotta know. I don't know. I gotta ask.
I don't like it.
What's the matter?
I can't tell. Seems as though I hear something, and then when I listen, there ain't nothing to hear.
Well, it ain't out of the question, you know.
We're all a little itchy. Cops been telling us how they're gonna beat us up and run us out of the country. Not them regular deputies, but them tin seal men, the ones they got for guards. They figure I'm the leader because I talk so much.
Turn out the light. Come outside. There's something here.
Vaughn blows out the lantern and the five men step outside the tent.
What is it?
I don't know. Listen.
Can't tell whether you hear it or not. You hear it, Tom?
I hear it. I think there's some guys coming this way, a lot of them. We gotta get out of here.
Down that way, under the bridge span.
They wade into the water and trudge towards the bridge. They cross under the bridge and are suddenly bathed in light. Four guards are shining torches on them.
There he is, the one in the middle, a skinny one. Chuck, Alec, get him!
They run in different directions to escape. Casey and Tom are cut off by the guards.
Fellas, you don't know what you're doing. You're helping to starve kids.
Ah, shut up, you dirt.
Casey is clubbed.
You've killed him.
Yeah, serves him right, too.
Look out!
Tom grabs one of the guard's truncheons and slams it down on his head. Another guard clubs Tom, but he stays on his feet and runs.
Boy, he's dead. He's good and dead. Did you see the fellow that done it?
I ain't sure, but I caught him one across the face. He'll have a trademark he won't be able to get rid of in a hurry.
Tom crawls through the undergrowth and runs unsteadily back to the cabin, holding one hand to his face. He collapses in the doorway.
Ma?
Tom! Tom! Pa, wake up! Al, make a light!
Ma emerges in her nightdress, and they help Tom inside. Ma glances around to make sure no one is looking before closing the door. It opens again a few moments later, and Ruthie comes out in her nightdress to fill a bowl of water from the tap, while Al keeps a lookout. Al pulls the door closed, and the curtains go across on the cabin window. Mari's up early the next morning to catch up on the local gossip. She returns to the cabin where Rosa Sharon is keeping a constant watch through a crack in the door. She removes her hatpin and takes off her straw hat, placing it on a table.
Anybody ask anything?
No, ma'am.
You stay by that door.
Yes, ma'am.
She crosses to where Tom lies.
Tommy?
How does it feel?
Busted my cheek, but I can still see. What'd you hear?
Looks like you done it.
I thought so. I felt like it.
Folks ain't talking about much else. They say they got posses out. Talking about lynching when they catch the fella.
We killed Casey first.
That ain't the way they're telling me. They're saying you done it first.
Do they know what the fellow looks like?
They know he got hit in the face.
I'm sorry, Ma. I didn't know what I was doing anymore, and when you take a breath, I didn't even know I was gonna do it.
Oh, it's all right, Tommy. I wished you didn't do it. But you done what you had to do. And I can't read no fault in you.
She rests a damp cloth on his forehead.
I'm going away tonight, Ma. I can't go putting this on you folks.
Tom, there's a whole lot I don't understand. But going away ain't gonna ease us. There was a time we was on the land. There was a boundary to us then. Old folks died off and little fellers come. We was always one thing. We was the family. Kind of whole and clear. But now we ain't clear no more. There ain't nothing that keeps us clear. Al, he's a hankering and gibbeting to be off on his own. Uncle John's just dragging around. Your pa's lost his place. He ain't the head no more. We're cracking up, Tom. There ain't no family now. And Rosa Sharon, she's gonna have her baby, but it won't have no family. I'm in a trying to keep her going, but... And Winfield, what's he gonna be this away? Grown up, wild, and Ruthie too. Just like animals. Got nothing to trust. Don't go, Tom. Stay and help. Help me.
Okay, Ma. I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't, but okay.
Boy, here come a lot of people.
How many?
10 of us.
How's 25? The number's on the door.
Okay, mister. What's you paying?
2.5 cents.
2.5? Say, mister, a man can't make his dinner on that.
Take it or leave it. There are 200 men coming in from the south that'll be glad to get it.
But are we gonna eat?
Look, I didn't set the price. If you want it, okay. If you don't, turn around and beat it.
Which way, house 25?
Straight up the street.
Ma stands at the door listening to the conversation in dismay. She goes back inside.
That Casey. He might have been a preacher, but he's seen things clear. He was like a lantern. He helped me to see things, too.
Comes night, we'll get out of here.
Like a lantern.
That night, they furtively packed their truck parked outside the cabin. Tom, with a bandage on his face, is hidden in the back under a mattress.
Jump up. It's just till we get some distance, then you can come out.
Maybe get trapped in here.
Get him off.
Hey, where you going?
We're going out.
What for?
We got a job offered, a good job.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, let's take a look at you.
The guards examine the vehicle and the occupants with their flashlights. They shine the light into their faces and under the chassis. A guard talks to Al, who's in the driving seat. He switches the headlights on, ready to go. They illuminate his face.
Wasn't there another fellow with you?
You mean that hitchhiker? Little short fella with a pale face?
I guess that's what he looked like.
We just picked him up on the way in. He left this morning when the rate dropped.
What did you say he looked like again?
Short fella. Pale face.
Was he bruised about the face this morning?
I didn't see nothing.
Okay. Go on.
A guard signals for Ma to get on board. More club-wielding guards greet them at the closed gates.
Going out for good?
Yeah, going north. Got a job.
Okay.
They open the gates to let them through. They close them as soon as they've left.
Done good, Al. You've done real good.
Well, where we're going?
Oh, it don't matter. We gotta go and keep it going till we get plenty of distance away from here.
On a country road, they pull over as steam once again billows from the radiator. Al removes a mattress and opens the bonnet. Everything is hot to the touch.
The fan belt shot.
She looks pretty nice place for it, too, didn't she? Got any gas?
About half a gallon.
Well, Ma, sure looks like we done her this time.
Lights up ahead. There might be a camp or something.
Looks like about a mile. Reckon she'll coast her, Al?
Got to coast it.
Well, let's give her a whirl, huh? Come on, kids. Get in. Come on.
Tom picks up the hot radiator cap from the ground where it's fallen and slaps it on the radiator. It doesn't stop the steam. They cruise on despite a broken fan belt. They head into another camp under a sign saying Farm Workers Wheat Patch Camp, Department of Agriculture. They head in so fast the truck is shaken up. Pots and pans fly off, and John, Ruthie, and Winfield are bounced out of the back.
You hit it too fast.
What's the idea of that?
Well, you see, a lot of children play in here. You can tell people to drive slow, and they're liable to forget, but once they hit that hump, and they don't forget.
Got any room here for us?
Oh, you're lucky. How to do, ma'am? How are you? How are you? Down that line, turn to the left. You'll see it. You'll be in number 4 sanitary unit.
What's that?
Toilet, showers, wash tubs.
You mean we'll have wash tubs with running water?
Yes, ma'am. A camp committee will call on you in the morning. Get you fixed.
Cops?
No cops. No, people here elect their own cops. The ladies committee will call on you, ma'am. Tell you about the children, the schools, and sanitary unit, and who takes care of them. Will you come inside and sign up?
They all stare in disbelief at the smiling, bespectacled campsite warden in slacks and pullover. He seems too nice.
Drive on down, Al. I'll sign up.
Right this way. In here.
Tom follows him slowly into the office. The warden sits at his desk and dips his pen into an inkwell.
Now, I don't want to seem inquisitive, you understand, but there's certain information I have to have. What's your name?
Joad. Tom Joad.
J-O-A-D. And how many of you?
8 now.
Uncle John, you don't look so good.
I ain't so good, but I'm coming.
They push the truck.
Joe. Campsite costs $1 a week, but you can work that out. Carrying garbage, keeping the camp clean, things like that.
We'll work it out. What's the committee you're talking about?
Well, we have 5 sanitary units. Each one elects a central committee man. They make the laws, and what they say goes.
You aiming to tell me the fellas that are running the camp are just fellas camping here?
That's the way it is.
And you say no cops?
No cop can come in here without a warrant.
I can't hardly believe it. Camp I was in before, they burned it out, the deputies and some of them poorer fellas.
They don't get in here. Sometimes the boys patrol the fences, especially on dance nights.
You got dances too?
We have the best dances in the county every Saturday night.
Who runs this place?
The government.
Why ain't they more like it?
You find out. I can't.
Was anything like work around here?
Well, I can't promise you that. But there'll be a licensed agent here later if you want to talk to him. That cut you have.
Crate fell on me.
I better take care of it. Store manager will give you something for it. I'll see you later.
Ma's sure gonna like it here. She ain't been treated decent for a long while. See you later.
Tom still can't believe it as he strolls in the camp. a notice at a communal tap says, "Turn off water, help keep our campground clean." Tom notices the last user has left the tap running. He turns it off. He feels at last a sense of pride, a sense of belonging, a sense of community. There's a framed terrace in front of their tent. Pa sits while Ma cuts his hair. Ruthie has made a discovery. She wants to share it with her brother. She rushes into the tent.
Winfield! Winfield! Get up! I've got something to show you.
What's the matter?
It's some white things made out of dish stuff, like in the catalogs. Come on, I'll show you.
They amble deliberately casual past Ma so they don't attract attention. Then, as Ma watches curiously, they break into a run towards the toilet block.
Come on, ain't nobody gonna say anything.
The wash basins sparkle with cleanliness.
There's where you wash your hands. What's these?
Well, I reckon you stand in them little rooms, and water comes down out of that little jigger up there. You take a bath.
Oh, look! Just like in the catalog.
Hey, don't you go among here!
No, you didn't. You busted it. All I done was pull that string.
They rush out and almost run into the bemused warden. They dash off in the opposite direction, two dogs joining them for the fun of the run. Tom and two other men are digging out a ditch for the laying of pipes. A neighboring farmer has hired them. He turns up and sits down on the dug-up soil.
Hiya, Mr. Thomas.
Morning.
How are you?
Morning.
Nice job. Listen here. Maybe I'm going to talk myself out of my farm, but I like you fellas. You're good workers. So I'm going to tell you. You live over in the government camp, don't you?
Yes, sir.
And you have dances over there every Saturday night.
We sure do.
Well, look out next Saturday night.
What's the matter? I'm head to the Central Committee over there. I gotta know.
Well, don't tell I told you. Listen. Citizens angered at Red agitators burn another squatter's camp and order agitators to leave the county.
Listen, what is these Reds anyway? Every time you turn around, somebody calling somebody else a Red. What is these Reds anyway?
Oh, I ain't talking about that one way or the other. All I'm saying is that there is going to be a fight at the camp Saturday night, and there'll be deputies ready to go in. Now, go on with your work. Maybe I've talked myself into trouble, but your folks like us, and I like you.
We won't tell who told. Thank you.
All right.
There ain't gonna be no fight, either.
The worker on the Central Committee shakes hands with the farmer. They go back to their digging.
Who'd you say invited you?
Mr. and Mrs. Brown.
Oh, go right on in, folks. Go right on in. Hello there,
Jerry.
How are you?
Hi, Miss Jenny. Hi, Glad to see you.
It's the Saturday night rodeo dance. Couples whirl their partners in the open air to the music of a live band. Al uses the opportunity to chat up a girl at the entrance to her tent, not knowing that her mother is within earshot.
Hello.
Hello.
Gonna dance tonight? I can waltz.
Oh, that's nothing. Anybody can waltz.
Well, not like me, they can't.
You get going. This girl spoke for us. She's going to be married and her man's coming for her, so get.
The girl clings seductively to the tent pole. Her mother gives her a slap on the bottom.
Hiya, Bill.
Nice looking gal you got there, huh?
Hiya, Mr. Thomas. Hiya, Miss Thomas.
You're watching out, ain't you?
Don't you worry. There ain't going to be no trouble.
I hope you know what you're talking about.
Hey, little boys. Who'd you say invited you?
Fellow named Jackson. Buck Jackson.
Okay. Have a good time.
Thanks.
A chain link fence is lowered to allow the four men in. An official views them suspiciously.
Hey. Them's our fellas.
How do you know?
Just got a feeling. They're kind of scared, too. Follow him. Get hold of Jackson. See if he knows him. I'll stay here.
Yeah.
Al tries another girl, then sees her father.
Well.
Hello.
So long.
Ma, Rosa, Sharon, Ruthie, and Winfield arrive and are made welcome. The children immediately start dancing together. A middle-aged man asks Rosa Shallon for a dance.
Lisa dance, ma'am?
Oh, thank you kindly, but she ain't right well, sort of poorly.
Well, thank you just the same.
Have you?
The four suspicious men are standing behind Ma and Rosa Shallon leaning on a fence. They ignore Ma's greeting.
Hey, Jackson. Look, did you ever see them fellas before?
As Jackson looks on, one of the men stubs his cigarette out on the fence.
Sorry, neighbor, but we got to keep the camp clean. I know one of them. Used to work with him. I never asked him to the dance, though.
All right, keep your eye on him. Just keep him in sight, that's all.
Jackson resumes his dance. Tom is in a tent with camp committee members. A youth bursts in.
I see him, Mr. Wallace. A car with five men parked down by the eucalyptus trees. And another one with four men up on the main road. And they got guns, too. I seen him.
Thank you, Willie. You done right good. You can run along and dance now. Well, sure looks like the fat's in the fire this time.
What them deputies want to hurt the camp for? How come they can't let us alone?
We'd ought to get ourselves some pickaxe handles.
No, that's just what they want. No, sirree. If they can get a fighter going, they can call in the cops. Say we ain't orderly.
Hey, they're here. We got them spotted.
Got everything ready?
Ain't gonna be no trouble.
I don't want you to go hurting them fellas now.
You don't need to worry, none. We got everything arranged. Maybe nobody will even see it.
Well, just don't use no sticks or no knives or
no piece of iron.
If you gotta sock them or they ain't gonna bleed.
The four suspicious men walk across the raised dance floor wearing their hats. The master of ceremonies approaches them.
Gentlemen, hats off, please. Thank you.
They remove their hats and walk on. Six camp officials are close behind them. Tom sneaks up behind Ma and Rosa Shallon. His sister, looking pretty with dangling earrings, sees him, and they exchange warm smiles.
She's getting prettier every day, Ma.
Girl with a baby's always prettier.
Al, in slacks and wearing a neckerchief, stares enviously at the dancing couples. The first girl he tried to date suddenly turns up and offers herself as a partner. He can hardly believe it. She puts her cheek next to his, and they sway to the music.
Come on, Ma, let's dance.
Oh, Tom, I...
Come on, Al!
As Tom dances with Ma, Pa takes her place on a bench next to Rosa Shallon. Ma smiles happily and looks into her son's eyes with pride.
Come and sit by my side if you love me. Do not hasten to bid me adieu. But remember the Red River Valley. Boy who has loved you so
true. Al and his first date hold each other closely, much to the amusement of Ruthie and Winfield.
929, let's go.
Two carloads of armed deputies speed away from where they've been waiting.
All right, 930. Here we go.
At the dance, the suspicious-looking characters try to create a disturbance.
Buddy, I'll dance with
her. You and who else? Excuse me, Ma.
Why?
They're quickly overcome and restrained by the men who are waiting for them to cause trouble.
All right, open up. We're here. Got a riot.
Riot? I don't see any riot. Who are you?
Deputy sheriffs.
Well, have you got a warrant?
We don't need a warrant when there's a riot.
Well, I don't know what you're going to do about it. I don't hear any riot. I don't see any riot. What's more, I don't believe there is any riot. Look for yourself.
From behind the chain fence, all the deputies can see are happy people dancing. They look disconcerted. One checks his watch.
All right, let's go.
They stare sourly at the warden, who stands calmly with a cigarette in his mouth. In the middle of the night, while the camp sleeps, two deputy sheriffs are on the prowl accompanied by the warden. They've persuaded him to allow them to check vehicle licenses as part of a major inquiry. One officer carries a flashlight. They're heading towards the Jode family tent. Tom sleeps on the terrace outside the tent, and the light wakes him. Tom peers from his bed on the raised platform, his face filled with alarm. He sees that they're checking the license plate on their truck, which is parked next to their encampment. One officer has a foot on the fender and is writing in a notebook, propped on his knee.
Oklahoma, EL-204.
There's panic in Tom's eyes. He looks over his shoulder for his clothes and starts quietly dressing. By the time he has his shirt on, the party is walking away from the truck and past him again. He quickly lies down, pretending to be asleep. The torch is shone on the encampment once more, but they continue to walk on. When the coast is clear, Tom stands and finishes dressing, all the time watching the deputies as the warden escorts them towards the camp exit. As he walks, one of the law officers is still making notes in the light of the torch the other is holding.
You have no right to arrest anybody without a warrant, you know.
We'll have a warrant just as soon as we check with headquarters.
Now dressed, Tom stands outside the tent and puts a cigarette between his lips as he hears their car start up. He neatly folds a blanket and goes inside the tent for a match. Before lighting his cigarette, he holds the match over his mother's bed and sees she's sleeping soundly. He knows he has to leave without delay to avoid being pursued as a fugitive who's also broken the terms of his parole. He puts the match to his cigarette and inhales the smoke, deep in thought. He reaches into a small suitcase on a table and removes a few small items of clothing from it. He places the clothing on the blanket on the ground and rolls it up with the clothes inside to make a bundle. He gives a long, lingering look at his sleeping mother and then turns to leave.
Tommy, ain't you gonna tell me goodbye?
His mother gazes at him, her eyes filled with concern. He squats down to her level.
I didn't know, Ma. I didn't know if I ought to.
Ma...
Hush, Ruthie. Come outside.
He steps outside the tent and places his bundle on a chair. He produces a knife from the pockets of his dungarees and cuts some rope off the outside terrace frame. He ties up the bundle to make a carrying strap. He puts the strap over his shoulder. Ma emerges from the tent. She hitches up her dress and steps from the terrace. She looks around in the moonlight to make sure nobody is about.
There was some cops here tonight. It was taking down license numbers. I guess somebody knows something.
I guess it had to come, sooner or later.
Tom glances at his father, sleeping on a bed on the terrace. Ma walks away, not wanting to wake him. Before Tom follows her, he bends down and kisses Pa on the forehead. Ma has crossed to the dance floor where she was so happy earlier. She sits on the edge of the wooden dancing platform and signals for Tom to join her.
Sit down for a minute.
I'd like to stay, Ma. I'd like to be with you and see your face when you and Pa get settled in some nice place. I'd sure like to see you then. But I won't never get that chance, I guess, now.
I could hide you, Tommy.
I know you would, Ma, but I ain't gonna let you. You hide somebody that's killed a guy, and you're in trouble, too.
All right, Tommy. But what do you figure you're gonna do?
You know what I've been thinking about? About Casey. About what he said, what he done, about how he died. And I remember all of it.
He was a good man.
I've been thinking about us, too. About our people living like pigs and good, rich land laying fallow. Or maybe one guy with 1 million acres and 100,000 farmers starving. And I've been wondering if all our folks got together and yelled.
Oh, Tommy, they'd drive you out and cut you down just like they done to Casey.
They'd drive me anyways. Sooner or later, they'd get me for one thing, if not for another. Until then.
Tommy, you're not aiming to kill nobody.
No, Ma, not that. That ain't it. It's just, well, as long as I'm an outlaw anyways, maybe I can do something. Maybe I can just find out something. Just scrounge around and maybe find out what it is that's wrong. And see if ain't something can be done about it. I ain't thought it all out clear, Ma. I can't. I don't know enough.
Well, how am I going to know about you, Tommy? Why, they could kill you, and I'd never know. They could hurt you. How am I going to know?
Well, maybe it's like Casey says. Fella ain't got a soul of his own, just a little piece of a big soul. The one big soul that belongs to everybody. Then
what, Tom?
Then it don't matter. I'll be all around in the dark. I'll be everywhere, wherever you can look. Wherever there's a fight so hungry people can eat, I'll be there. Wherever there's a cop beating up a guy, I'll be there. I'll be in the way guys yell when they're mad. I'll be in the way kids laugh when they're hungry and they know supper's ready. And when the people are eating the stuff they raise and living in the houses they build, I'll be there, too.
I don't understand it, Tom.
Well, me neither, Ma, but just something I've been thinking about. Give me your hand, Ma. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Tommy. Later, when this is blowed over, you'll come back.
Sure, Ma.
Tom, we ain't the kissing kind, but...
She tenderly places her arm on his shoulder and kisses him on the cheek. He kisses her cheek.
Goodbye, Ma.
Goodbye, Tommy.
He strides across the dance floor and disappears without glancing back.
Tommy.
Watches as he walks into the night. She sits down at the edge of the dance floor, alone in the moonlight and alone with her thoughts. The next day, a procession of overloaded vehicles leave the campsite, waving happy goodbyes to the warden and to neighbors. The Jode family are packing their things, too.
Bring that up, Al. Get it rolled up. Hi, Vic, John.
Get along high.
Here. Winfield, you get up on top now. Get out of the way.
I don't see what you folks are hurrying so for. They tell me there's 20 days' work up there.
Yes, sir, and we aim to get in all 20 of them.
All ready, Ma?
Yes. How you feel, Rover Sharon?
All aboard, everybody. All aboard for Fresno.
Wait a minute, I'll give you a hand.
Careful up
now. Rosa Sharon is feeling ill. She's lifted onto the truck by Pa and John.
He'll be all right.
Watch her, John.
I'll take care of her.
Take care of her. Hiya fixed, Al.
Right, Pa.
Ma is feeling tearful.
Now, Ma.
Pa looks at her with understanding. They finally pull out in their rickety jalopy, Ruthie and Winfield waving from the top. The Wharton and committee members wave back warmly. They stand and watch as the truck disappears into the distance. The Wharton takes out a cigarette. They're one of many similar vehicles on the road, driving through rolling countryside. Pa and Ma sit in the front with Al, who's driving and smiling.
20 days' work. Oh, boy.
I'll be glad to get my hands on some cotton. That's the kind of picking I understand.
Maybe 20 days' work and maybe no days' work. We ain't got it till we get it.
What's the matter, Ma? Getting scared?
Scared? Huh. I ain't never gonna be scared no more. The odds, though. For a while, it looked as though we was beat. Good and beat. Looked like we didn't have nobody in the whole wide world but enemies. Like nobody was friendly no more. Made me feel kind of bad and scared, too. Like we was lost and nobody cared.
You're the one that keeps us going, Ma. I ain't no good no more, and I know it. Seems like I spend all my time these days thinking how it used to be. Thinking of home. I ain't never going to see it no more.
Well, Pa, a woman can change better than a man. A man lives sort of, well, in jerks. Baby's born and somebody dies, and that's a jerk. He gets a farm or loses it, and that's a jerk. With a woman, it's all in one flow like a stream. Little eddies and waterfalls, but the river, it goes right on. A woman looks at it that way.
Well, maybe. Maybe we're sure taking a beating.
I know. That's what makes us tough. Rich fellas come up and they die, and their kids ain't no good and they die out. But we keep a coming. We're the people that live. They can't wipe us out, they can't lick us. We'll go on forever, Pa, because we're the people.
We'll be right back.